Hi, this is Daniel Jalka.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, the podcast with two Mac developers going on and on about the App Store. Well, welcome back, everybody, to Core Intuition. And I'm here with my friend Manton Reese. How you doing, Manton?
I'm doing good. Thanks. How are you?
I am good. And what have you been up to lately? It's been a couple weeks since we talked last time, I think. We're dropping the ball a little bit.
Yeah, we're in that not quite weekly, not quite, you know, every 2 weeks. But this weekend, actually, I've been working a bunch on WeTransfer. We talked about the mystery app that I've been working on, but as soon as we talked about it last week, I proceeded to not work on it for a week and a half.
Well, you're supposed to drop like a new piece of information every week, and then by the by the 52nd episode of Core Intuition, we should have a pretty good idea.
Right.
So far we know that it is it's a piece of software, and that it runs on the Mac.
Right.
So you've already been pretty forthcoming with us.
What else can I reveal? The icon has some blue in it. Does that count as any kind of hint?
It's a pretty weak hint.
Yeah, I know. Well, that it runs on the Mac is also a pretty weak hint. Let's see. Well, it's similar. I guess I'll say it's similar to WeTransfer in that the application wouldn't have existed so much a couple years ago. You know, a new device or a new service comes along, and then that's an opportunity to build an app that works with that device or service or whatever, you know, whatever it is. So it's similar in that way. There's a bunch of apps that do similar things, but they don't connect quite the right way that I want them to with, you know, whatever new device or service this is communicating with.
So it's a new app, possibly for a new service. I've got a great idea along those lines. It has to do with the iPhone App Store.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a free software idea for some genius out there. Write an app for the Mac that is like the iTunes App Store, but it doesn't show you crappy apps.
Right. It just filters out everything. But who judges? I mean, is this whoever develops this app will be the judge of what's a crappy app? Or
I guess that's the core problem, isn't it? It's the problem that Apple faces and anybody would face, is how do we editorialize these things effectively?
Yeah, and clearly user ratings aren't quite enough right now, because we're seeing a bunch of, you know, apps being reviewed in the App Store with one star, and the person hasn't tried the app yet, maybe, or they just think it's too expensive.
Yeah, so I guess we didn't last long before lunging into talking about the iPhone App Store. I guess I'm sort of to blame for that, but I assume you have updated to the 2.0 software on your iPhone?
Yep, I did. I did actually the sort of pre-release, the leaked 2.0 firmware on Thursday, which turns out, I don't know, maybe it's actually the 3G firmware. I'm confused about whether that was legit or not. But it works. It works great. And I proceeded to spend almost all of Thursday just downloading apps and playing with new stuff.
Yeah, you know, I did a little bit, but I think I must feel like I don't have enough free time or something. I also feel, I definitely feel like I'm being limited by what I've read a few other people say, which is that even if an app's only $5 or $10, you're still sort of don't want to waste it on something you don't know is going to be actually useful. And it's really hard to get a good idea for how something is going to work unless you sort of trust the company to make really quality stuff, or unless they have really, really expressive screencasts or something on their own website.
Right. And I've found that a lot of websites actually are almost non-existent. I mean, it seems like half the apps I've downloaded don't even have a website.
Right. Yeah. They're just
let alone a screencast or anything.
Yeah. There's this whole class of like seemingly pure iPhone developer type companies that have just sprung up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of this stuff is sort of, nights and weekends type pursuits from people who have possibly other professional lives, but
sure.
It does seem interesting. There's a lot of new names that I don't recall ever having seen on the Mac. Of course, this platform is I'm sure attracting people from, you know, non-Mac backgrounds as well. But I've been kind of interested to see some of the things that have popped up. I really do think though what we're going to need now more than ever is some really trustable sort of editorializing, and obviously there's always going to be a flaw in that you have to, you know, trust that the person doing the reviewing is is seeing things the same way you are, but it sort of makes like the whole proposition of editorial reviews, I think, becomes, you know, 10 times more important when you don't even have the option to try the software out yourself.
Right. And even with reviews, even just a little bit from someone you trust is enough, I think, to give you a good idea. For example, one of the first apps I downloaded was Super Monkey Ball. It was $10. I was like, okay, I got to get this. It looks like a great use of the iPhone. Turns out I don't actually like it very much. I don't know if you've downloaded it, but I expected you to hold the iPhone in a different way. You actually sort of hold it at a slant. And so it just feels kind of wrong the way they do the controls. And I downloaded it immediately. I couldn't try a demo, so I didn't know how it worked. That's fine. You know, I wanted to download and buy a bunch of new stuff just to see what people are doing. But if I had waited until someone I trusted, you know, had tried it and they said the same thing, which a couple of people ended up, you know, on posting on Twitter or their blogs or something, that they didn't think it was quite lived up to the hype, maybe.
Yeah.
Then I probably would have held back. So yeah, I don't know. I'd love to have demos. If that's not possible, at least having someone you trust or a website that you trust give you kind of a good impression of the game would help, or the app.
Right. Yeah. I really think, it doesn't seem like it would be too hard for, because these things, part of the whole protection scheme, right, is that periodically these apps are like expiring if they, you know, or they have to be like, the validity, I think, has to be renewed after a certain period of time. It's kind of like I think the same type of thing applies for like the iTunes Music and all that. Mm-hmm. It sort of seems like it should be possible. I mean, as a developer myself, I wouldn't mind if Apple wanted to do something similar to what I offer my desktop customers, which is a full featured evaluation period. Mm-hmm. I say let people download my iPhone apps when they're ready and run them for a month or whatever. And even if it's something a little less fine-grained than that, like it's going to expire within, you know, 2 weeks and 2 months, you know, it might be... The bottom line is this is the kind of thing where, you know, developers who really don't want customers that don't love the software, they don't care if you know.
Right.
Generous evaluation period is fine.
Absolutely. If you care, if you think your software is of good quality and, you know, it's going to hold up. If someone tries it and they like it, you know, they'll buy it. But if you're putting out a bunch of junk, you know, maybe it's not in your best interest to have.
Yeah,
a
right.
Period. You want the impulse buys where people try it and then that's it. They have no choice but to use it or not.
Like for instance, if you're selling public domain books in the form of an app for 99 cents, then I guess maybe that won't exactly work with the 30-day evaluation policy.
Right.
But, I guess maybe one of the App Store 2.0 features could be like something that allows developers to specifically build in an evaluation period, you know, and then that way a developer could choose either to have none or to have 1 day or 1 month or whatever is most appropriate for what they're doing.
And even, I mean, any, even if it's not a choice, even if developers can't choose, that's still, you know, got to have something. I mean, and I don't see why they couldn't just maybe take the iTunes rental model and apply it. I mean, we everyone who uses iTunes or has an Apple TV complains that the rental is only 24 hours, which does suck, I think, for movies, because a lot of times you start watching a movie at night and then you can't finish until the next day. And then, oops, it's been 24 hours and, you know, you're under this problem. But for apps, 24 hours is enough to at least try it.
Yeah.
You at least get to tap around. And most of these apps are simple enough where you can flip through the screens. You can see if it works. You can use whatever features it has and then decide to buy or not.
Right. Yeah. That's something like that. Something's got to give. I mean, I expected when I first heard about the store and I was anticipating it, I really sort of expected the burden of the like $9.99 or whatever to be low enough, or the psychological, you know, boundary to be low enough that I would just buy more things on a whim. And I think what sort of changed that is a combination of the sheer number of things that are available even already and the number of things that look on the face of them to be sort of crappy. So I guess maybe what I was envisioning in my utopian view of the App Store was something where, it's so naive in retrospect, but something where somehow only really sort of polished and good applications made it onto the phone. And I understand there's all really good arguments against having any sort of an editorial gatekeeper who, you know, in the form of Apple, sort of blocking apps just based on their aesthetic preferences or whatever. But yeah, it's really a mess right now, I think, looking at what's out there. And obviously Apple sort of still is the gatekeeper to the extent that they can be the ones who decide, you know, who the staff picked applications and who the featured apps are. But it's a little depressing to me. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if we talked about this on the show or not, but I know in the past we've talked about the $99, you know, entry fee or whatever you call the developer program, you know, fee, sort of filtering out junk apps. And that clearly hasn't happened, right?
No.
I mean, the $99 is, you know, that doesn't do anything. As far as I can tell,
it makes you wonder. Yeah.
Or maybe it would be much worse with that. I don't know.
Right.
And so, getting back to something you said a minute ago about people and companies you don't recognize, I've seen at least a few apps that were ported over from Palm or some other mobile platform, that's interesting to see how they adapt to the iPhone UI or, you know, how well they're received.
Yeah, there was that. I don't even want to say its name because I think it got too much publicity already. But there was that one that John Gruber linked on his Flickr page, and it was comically sort of crowded, and the color schemes were kind of funny, and but I don't think that I've seen other apps now, the screenshots of them, and I think that sort of not very Mac inspired design has unfortunately taken off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'm being a little pessimistic now, and I'd just like to say that I am confident that, I think what happened here is we're facing sort of two problems here. One is what we're seeing right now is just this tiny subset of all of the apps that will exist for this platform.
Right.
First of all, it's only apps from developers who lucked into getting accepted into the program in time to be able to develop on the device. I was among that lucky crowd of developers, and unfortunately, I didn't get anything quite ready to ship on the opening date. But you know, we're looking at that limited pool of people, and then we're looking at within that pool of people, those who were inspired and motivated enough to get something out on day one. And I think what that means is you get some really good apps from people who just made it an utmost priority to do their iPhone app for day one. And some examples I think of where that special care went in is an app like Twitterific or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think another sort of consequence of the being first, it's kind of like that joke about, right, the commenters on the blogs who just say first, right? If you think about the mentality that's driving some of these developers to get their app done for day one of the App Store, it's not about being the most refined and the most elegant user experience. It's about quite literally trying to make a grab for the perceived, you know, money grab there. Maybe not even perceived, mm-hmm. maybe quite real. But, you got a million phones that just, we just heard a million phones sold in the first 3 days.
Right.
And so a million new customers browsing the App Store. That does sound like a money grab. I can't really fault anybody for trying to get into that market, but I do think it colors the sort of the urgency with which some of these apps might have been rushed to the market.
And as we're definitely every day we're seeing a new batch of apps come. I think there's been at least a dozen apps a day released into the store. That's what it feels like to me. If you go into iTunes and sort by release date, and I think someone's even got an RSS feed now, so you can see every day, you know, what apps come in. So I'm expecting just wave after wave of apps to come in, and some of those will have competitors that were in the App Store on day one, and some won't.
Right.
And we'll just see how it shakes out. I'm also curious how they're going to do the top. You know, the top 10 apps. I like how they split out top free apps versus top paid apps.
Yeah, that's nice.
And I wonder if those apps that were there on day one, if they're going to be really hard to beat out, or if it's going to be kind of a rolling thing where it's really just what's popular this week.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think in the podcast directory, that's what they do for top popular podcasts, and maybe probably for music too. It's not, you know, all time bestsellers, but what right now in the last few days are people buying? So that will allow even people late to the App Store to still bubble up to the top.
Yeah, I'm counting on it. hoping for it and counting on it. But I do hope that in a way, I said I was depressed about the state of the store, but in a way, I hope that against this backdrop of sort of disappointingly, a lot of disappointing to me and clunky looking apps, I hope against that backdrop, the really well thought out apps that are still yet to come will, as you say, just bubble up quickly to the top.
I certainly think that's going to be possible. I mean, we see that on the Mac. You know, every year there's some established application and someone else comes along and they do the idea better. And, you know, now all of a sudden they're the best app for that category of software.
Right.
Do you, I noticed yesterday or today, there is some competition for you already in the store. Do you have any feelings about that?
Are you talking about the crosswords?
Yeah, I'm talking about the crosswords, which actually I think is one of those apps I saw that was ported from Palm.
Yeah, actually, I was expecting that app. It's actually a friend of mine, Ben Gottlieb. You might know him, maybe from Mac SB on IRC. He's been there. He's done a few of the Iron Coders, and he's a great guy. He and I have talked over the past couple of years, or at least I guess past year, because he has for a long time been developing the same type of app for Palm that I currently develop for the Mac, the crossword solving application. And I can't fault him for wanting to get on the iPhone. It's definitely coming from the Palm. I would imagine lots of people find it really compelling. And then I don't think he can probably fault me for wanting to get on the iPhone coming from a Mac background.
Sure.
But he does have his app out there, and I have to say I downloaded it, and it looks really pretty good.
Okay.
And I would encourage anybody who wants to solve some crosswords on their iPhone before I get my app done to go out and buy his app. I definitely see things that I would hope to do better, and there are probably some things that that he will end up doing better. So, but I think we are going to see a ton of competition on this phone, probably much more so than we currently see competition on the Mac. I'm not exactly sure why I think that's true, but I think it might have something to do with the phone sort of encourages it encourages a sort of purity of function.
Mm-hmm.
So you might find more developers willing to go ahead and complete a complete application because it sort of seems less daunting in a way to wrap up a complete set of functionality into an iPhone app, because there's so much less sort of in the way of integration features that are expected, you know, printing, Apple script support, drag and drop, all these things. You sort of have to, the finer nuanced points. Of course, there's different nuanced points on the phone, but I also sort of just think the psychology of a phone app is much more sort of single-minded, single purpose, you know. So I imagine we will see just a lot of really sharp functional apps that are just trying to achieve one thing well, and then we'll see a lot of competition.
Mm-hmm.
We already see that. Somebody from Macworld is reviewing all of the Sudoku apps he can find.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
I didn't see that, but I'm laughing because my wife installed 2.0 on her iPhone yesterday. So one of the first things she did was look for the Sudoku apps, and she laughed that there was just, you know, already several, you know, to choose from, and you know, how is she going to pick which one's the best? Or
yeah, this, I think it might have been, I'm probably going to get it wrong, but I think it might have been Glenn Fleischman. If I got that wrong, I'm sorry to whoever it really was who posted this Flickr photo, and it was like almost a full screen of apps. So it was like, I guess, what, seven or eight Sudoku apps, and they all have practically the same name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody wants to be the app on the iPhone called Sudoku. So and you don't get much room to put your name in there. So you can't be like, if I was going to make an app, I wouldn't call it Red Sweater Sudoku, because then it would show up as like Red ... Oku.
Yeah. Right.
Redoku. Maybe that's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it actually got me thinking a little bit, because there's this really, I'm going to mention this app only in the same breath as saying it's really, really, really crappy, which is the free Bank of America app, which I downloaded because I do have a Bank of America account. Boy, was that was just sad. It was a sad, sad moment, because it's like taking a web page and making it worse in like the confines of an app. But what struck me about it was the name of the app, which wasn't like Bank of America or BOFA or something. It was just online banking.
Mm-hmm.
It made me think, like, well, obviously the Sudoku screenshot proves that Apple's not doing anything to prevent multiple apps having the same name. But it sort of made me think, on day one, it felt kind of like a namespace grab, right?
Yep.
Like, oh, now if Wells Fargo comes along or Citibank comes along, do they have to call theirs like Mo Banking or something?
Yeah.
Or just banking. And it made me think, like, mm-hmm. I don't have Mars Edit mobile ready for the phone yet, but I guess somebody can just come along now, and if they choose to, I mean, I will invoke all of my legal rights and sue/intimidate them. But somebody, I think, could get away with putting a crappy app up there and calling it Mars Edit. Get away with for a day or two until hopefully I could convince some legal types to make it go away. But it sort of made me think about, like, I don't know if this has really been tested yet on the phone, what the namespace is like, and who has the rights to name what, right?
Right.
I mean, if somebody comes up with a Wii app and calls it Wii Transfer, it's like...
Yeah.
I guess the same problems exist on the desktop. It's just, I guess the fact that they all came out at once, right? That nobody had the opportunity to check and see if their name was available, because all names were available.
Yeah. And I think because it's a fresh start, there's a lot of people feel the need to name their app something very generic, like Crosswords or, mobile banking. And over time, the best apps are not going to be the generic names necessarily. They're going to have unique names that have a unique brand. But it is interesting that I mean, it's similar to, what happened with, .coms too, where, everyone wanted TV.com instead of, some other, specialized brand like YouTube or, whatever.
Right, right. And now YouTube wins, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of ironic.
You can't have a terrible name, but if your app is, uniquely branded and it's still the best, then it has an opportunity to sell well. And
yeah, I sort of wonder if having a generic type name on a mobile platform like this, where you're doing your shopping, from a closed store like the App Store, I wonder if a generic name like, blogging or Crosswords or Sudoku, I wonder if that's just like, how much does that increase the chances of a customer finding your product first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
For instance, when I finish my Crossword app, I'm not going to give it a new name just to make it, more generic sounding. I'm going to call it Black Ink, but it sort of crossed my mind, like, is this Crosswords app going to be the one that pops out at people and is the first choice? So,
well, I think you have two things going for you there. The first is you have an existing customer base that knows the brand Black Ink.
Right.
I mean, you made a conscious decision when you acquired the app to rebrand it, new icon, new application name. And then all that work you did will transfer over to the iPhone, because people that are happy Black Ink customers are going to buy the mobile version.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
But the other thing I think you have going for you is B comes before C. if you list all games, you're going to be near the top.
Ooh la la. I like the way you think, Mandon.
we're already seeing some people, try to spam or game the system by putting spaces in front of their name or silly things like, 99 cent, game at the beginning. to get to the top. But you, that's your name, Black Ink. Right. You know, you're not doing it to be devious. That's just the application name.
And in all fairness, I support the idea. I think maybe it came up on Twitter, and I think Dave Draben pointed out that Amazon does not have an alphabetical sort.
Mm-hmm.
He suggested, and I think it's a great suggestion to Apple, that they only provide temporal and topical types of sorting, and popularity, I guess. So if you have to drill down into the list of what's available, things are just sort of presented in a random order or in some order that's not based on the app's name, like maybe the dates that it was accepted at the store or who knows what. I think there's a good argument for that, because people, when they're going in to look for an app, if they're looking for an app by name, they will use the search, right?
Right.
I've already done that a couple times when I'm, thinking, oh, I know my friend released their app on the App Store today. I'm not going to go browse the categories and then look down a list. I'm just going to type it in, and then the App Store actually pops it up pretty quickly.
Yep.
I can't really see the reason for browsing into games and then being forced to look at A first, B second, C third. More appropriate would be to just add more subcategories until you have manageable pools of apps, right?
Yeah, I agree. They could start this way with 500 apps, but it doesn't scale past another week or two, I don't think.
Yeah.
It'd just be too much to deal with.
Yeah, that's the other thing is... I think some of these early, gold rush money grabbers are going to face a rude awakening when there are thousands of apps, because there will be nothing to cause them. They've had their moment in the sun by being there on day one, but I think many of them, judging by their quality, will I hope just get buried, because I can't see what would keep them up in the limelight, unless, of course, Apple continues to allow these kinds of alphabetical hacks to work.
Yep. I think that the first weekend, people were just spending money, because this is a new thing. I bought a bunch of apps. I may be spending like $50 or something, not a lot, but a bunch of different little apps just because it's a new, exciting thing. But from now on, I'm going to be more careful about what I choose to pay money for. And I think most people will be the same way.
Yeah. The novelty apps time was this past weekend, or not novelty, mm-hmm. but the sort of the I don't know what the word I'm trying to look for is, but the sort of pure impulse time was this last weekend, and probably not for a long time, if ever, will there be such a concentrated new market opportunity for the App Store. So that's how I see it. Is basically, it was a great boost for some people who had legitimate apps to get some visibility on the first weekend. It was an opportunity for some people with less legitimate apps to sort of walk out of the casino with their winnings. But probably as time goes on, there's going to have to be some system to make the good stuff rise and the bad stuff fall.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And we should maybe regroup in 6 months and see if like iBeer and Flashlight are still like the number one apps, and then we'll know. We just have no idea how this market is.
Yeah, then we'll know to give up, right? or we'll make a better Flashlight. So I guess we could probably go on for a long time talking about app names and particularly how they are going to be interpreted on the App Store. But looking at the clock here, it looks like we've already been talking about this for quite a while. And I don't know about you, but if any of my customers hear this podcast, they might get mad at me for spending more time talking about the App Store than actually having my apps on the App Store.
Right. I think you made the comment last week on Twitter that you'd love to have your app out immediately, but there's this little matter of actually writing code and testing and designing the UI. And
now, after having said that, I better damn well come out with something that's actually stands up to scrutiny. So I've spent this episode bemoaning so much of the, to my eye, undesigned applications on the store. I guess now I've set my own bar for what I need to achieve in the coming weeks and months.
That's true. You have no excuse. If you were there on day one, you could say, well, it was Rush, but now it's just got to be the best.
No, gosh. What have I done?
Sorry.
Well, maybe we should wrap it up for the week. But one quick question. I can't remember. Are you working on an iPhone app?
I don't have a specific app in development that has any timeline associated with it. I'm doing some experiments.
Always with your experiments in the lab.
No, I love to have an iPhone app. And I think part of it just didn't feel real to me until, I mean, I was playing in the simulator and I was testing stuff and I did, you know, the jailbreak thing, you know, last year, but until I actually had 2.0 with other people's apps on it, it didn't feel like it was a real thing. And now I'm definitely very excited about building something. I just need to figure out what that thing is.
Well, we've got opposite problems, I guess, since I've got all my work cut out for me. But I totally get what you're saying about it feeling more real. On Thursday was when I think a lot of us started playing around with the apps because they came out, you know, for us in the United States, it came out kind of a day early because Apple was accommodating Japan and New Zealand and these places in far, far future time zones. I sort of started thinking, sort of was regretful that I hadn't been able to get my stuff done in time, even though I had sort of resigned, I think, pretty definitively to not having it done in time. Mm-hmm. It did become very real and became very much like, wow, I could have my apps on that store and, and people could download them. It was like a very new, simple joy discovery again, to sort of think it all through. But anyway, I definitely am going to be working on my stuff, and I maybe your new secret app, you can think of a way to leverage that onto the phone.
It's not. I don't think it's a good fit, but we'll
see.
It's
secret. Experiment with it.
Yeah, I'll experiment. Well, one of the things I'm thinking about is having the iPhone be more of a companion to the desktop products. So it's maybe the iPhone is a free app or very cheap. That adds some value to the desktop app, but isn't a standalone, like you only want the iPhone version, if that makes sense.
Right. Yep.
So, and that's one way I'm going, because some of the apps, the like WeTransfer definitely on the Mac, and this other app that I'm working on, they don't make any sense, or there's technical problems with just porting them to the iPhone. That just doesn't make sense, like it does with Black Ink. Yeah. So.
Cool. Well, I guess enough talking about the iPhone. We got plenty of work to do, plenty of thinking to do. I hope everybody out there in podcast listening land is enjoying their, if you have an iPhone or an iPod Touch, I hope you're enjoying the updated 2.0 software. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And Manton, it was great to talk to you again.
Great talking to you.
Ciao.
Bye.